Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
It is 10 minutes after 12. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on a Monday afternoon. Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much for tuning in. A little bit later, we're going to talk podcasting. You know, there's a big podcasting show coming to Chicago in July, as show as in conference, you know, and it's one of those things that everyone does, and I'm not sure if they really know how to do it or how to get the word out or things like that. Before that, though, Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno are in the studio. Welcome, Inno boys.
Yeah, hey,
thanks,
Steve,
for having us.
I don't know if that's going to be your theme music or what exactly how we started there, but maybe we need to develop a jingle for you guys.
Please, that would be great, yeah.
Will, talk to me. Have your mic on?
Yeah, hey, how?
Okay, good, good.
I just got thinking about the jingle. now that's what I'm going to be working on all week.
Well, Chicago Inno is a really cool site if you want to keep up to date on what's happening in technology in the city. And it's kind of like DNA info for technology in a way.
Yeah, I mean, we shoot to be as accessible and conversational as possible, right? We're talking tech. Tech isn't sometimes the easiest thing to consume or digest, so we want to make that easy. We want to make it fun because there's a lot of cool stuff happening here.
You guys put out a little newsletter, too, that I've compared to Car Talk for Tech.
Yeah, The Beat. You can get The Beat daily, and Beat is basically, Jim and I talk about this stuff every day. We decided to just put it in a newsletter. So it's us going back and forth on the day's biggest news with a heavy focus on Chicago, but we're also hitting on everything national going on in the industry.
And Will is the general manager. Jim is just a lowly reporter.
Merely a staff writer.
Right. All right, so let's start with this company here, because you just wrote a story about that, Jim Dahlke. And, you know, we talk about when you think of tech companies and startups and all of that, here is not one that's really on the tip of our tongue.
Right, here, H-E-R-E. It's kind of like the beginning of an Abbott and Costello routine every time I talk about it.
Yeah.
But yeah,
you're still here, right?
Yes, but here is a really impactful company in the Chicago tech scene that we kind of overlook and we kind of don't talk about a lot.
Is it the biggest employer?
I think it's the third biggest. They're about third biggest digital employer. So they're behind Groupon. They are at about 1,100 employees. And basically, they are providing the mapping infrastructure behind driverless cars. Last year, if you remember, they were sold. They were previously owned by Nokia, and they were sold for about $3 billion to a consortium of German car makers. So kind of an under-the-radar company that we don't talk about a lot, but it's one that's really important. And we caught up with one of their executives last week, just kind of getting a sense for where the company's at in Chicago. And they are all in on Chicago. They are hiring hundreds of very high-skilled, high-tech jobs in Chicago, developers, engineers, data analytics, big kind of high-tech gigs here in Chicago, and they are just only adding more positions here in the city. And it's going to be a really important for the city of Chicago in terms of being a center for driverless cars.
Right, so if they're here and they're playing and you've got these car dealers playing with them, that means that it's only going to grow here in Chicago, you would think.
Yeah, we talked to them, and we asked them kind of like, what are your plans? Are you going to do any pilots in the city? Are we going to have driverless cars available here in Chicago that are going to be going around? He said, absolutely, that's part of their plans. They're in talks with the city. The city is on its own, working on its own infrastructure to kind of make areas in the city for that.
Well, talk to me a little bit about what the infrastructure is, because, you know, we think of driverless cars, and, you know, maybe I haven't thought about it too much, but in my mind, there's technology on the car that's going to see what's coming up and all of that. But really, there's a great reliance on GPS.
Yeah, GPS and all kinds of sensors. I mean, it's much more than just staying in your lane and knowing where the other cars are. I mean, these sensors need to know when there's an accident up ahead, when there's an animal in the road, when there is a road closure, when there's a temporary speed limit change. I mean, these are things that are happening at a moment's notice. And here is mapping that in real time and updating all the cars on the road using that mapping infrastructure. So it's a lot more than just, hey, I got to make sure I don't hit another car. You got to adjust to every continually changing road conditions.
And in the development of this, it takes two to tango, right? Like, we can count on the tech company to develop this connected car software, but we really need the roads in the city to kind of cooperate while this is working on. And Chicago's done a really cool job through something it's called the Beta City Initiative, where it's just saying, come use us as a playground. Use us as a lab. We will cooperate. We will allocate whatever resources and kind of street cooperation you need to get this done. And it's kind of positioned Chicago as a place that may emerge as this hub for connected cars. One, because you have companies that are building the tech, and two, you have cities that will support it as well.
All right, so that's interesting to know because, you know, it's so much – we hear so much about the negative of the city and the state and all of that, that they're really sort of fostering this development. It's a pretty cool thing. Let's talk. Oh, you've got some egg on your face there, Will.
No. Oh, here we go. Good lead.
Eastman Egg Company. I think I've had the CEO in before when they open up their second shop. So this is a really cool breakfast joint, right?
Yeah, so Eastman Egg is a they make delicious egg sandwiches, right? And it's funny, Steve, you introduced us, the Chicago Little Boys, we talk about tech in the city, and now I'm here talking about an egg company. But the reason why we're talking about this story is because it's very cool. They're behaving like a tech startup. They just raised $1.5 million from Hyde Park Angels, which is an angel syndicate based here in the city. And they're very growth mode. You know, when I talked to the CEO as well for the funding story, he described themselves, you know, we're a growth company. We're focused on growth. We're focused on expansion. They're also a perfect example of how, like, really everybody's a tech company, right? Like, every business is tech enabled. So Eastman Egg has a pretty slick app that uses geolocation software. So if I want to get an egg sandwich, I order it and it sends them a notice when I'm X amount of feet away so they can start cooking it.
And I've read about this, and it's patented, right? They've got the patent. So the idea is that it's just funny every time one of us says, I want an egg sandwich.
I want an egg sandwich right now.
So I decide I want an egg sandwich.
Yeah.
And in my app, I just write, I want an egg sandwich, right, essentially, on their app. And then when I go to the shop, when I get close enough, someone gets, you know, clicked in the head and says, Steve wants an egg sandwich, and they start making it.
Yeah, it uses beacon technology to send that notification. So Starbucks is doing something like this, but for the most part, like, you know, your coffee can sit there for a bit. So you can just say, hey, I'm coming to pick up my coffee, and then you can take 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever, and they'll set your coffee aside. But they can't really do this for an egg sandwich because you want your egg sandwich piping hot.
You want the yolk to be just right.
Right, just right. So what this app does, it says, all right, he is going to walk right in and 90 seconds, start making it.
Okay, and so the idea is that they are replacing the need for a pickup time. I'll be there in 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Is that really a need that needs to be replaced?
Well, that's a lot of tech, right? Like, are we saving lives? No, but we're making lives a little better. I mean, you know, if you can make my egg sandwich hot and I can skip a line in the loop, sure, you know, I get it. We're not curing anything, but they're using tech to make something better, and that's cool.
It's Eastman Egg Company, and watch them, right, because they've got their eyes on the whole wide world.
Breakfast market.
Yeah, they're just, you know, trying to scale like a startup using venture capital. It's a pretty interesting model.
And they started with a food truck, right, a few years ago?
Started with a food truck 3 years ago, now have two locations in Chicago, and they're using this funding to open two more. Really cool company, and again, they make egg sandwiches, but it's fun to see other businesses behave like a lot of the tech startups we cover.
It's true. Everyone is a tech person now. I mean, whether you're trying to print something in your basement or deliver the perfect
egg sandwich,
you need tech. That's Will Flanagan. Jim Dahlke is here. They're both from Chicago. You know, you should check out that website. And we're going to take a break, come back, and talk about Google launching its own incubator. What's that about? Thank you, Dolly McCarthy. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It is a beautiful Monday afternoon in downtown Chicago. Might be some storms coming in a little bit later, and it's going to get colder tomorrow. So blow off the afternoon at the office and enjoy this weather. That's what Jim Dahlke and Will Flanagan are doing. A couple of guys from Chicago. You know, they write about tech in the city and are going to be by from time to time. They have been. One of my favorite parts of doing the show is we even did a Christmas special
today. Yeah, Christmas.
A very, you know, Christmas. All right, so Google, this is a little outside the city limits, but Google now is going to set up their own incubator for people who work at Google.
So it's called Area 120, and it's based on the Google idea where they've always had this kind of internal philosophy where they've asked their employees, Please spend 20% on your time working on anything, any projects that you would like that can improve the business. And one of the, and like that has kind of created a lot of the things we know about Google. Google News was a side project. Gmail was a side project. So they've created Area 120 where they say anybody at Google, pitch us a project. If we like it, we're going to allow you to work on it full time. Maybe we'll invest in it. Maybe we'll turn it into its own company. But what's interesting is you hear this and you're like, oh, this is a smart idea to maybe create new features and functionality in businesses. Right. This is a retention play.
So this isn't about Google spreading out. This is about Google holding on.
Exactly. Yeah. Silicon Valley is so competitive. I mean, engineers are such a valuable commodity. You need to do everything you can to retain them. And this is a play to say, like, if you're interested in starting your own startup, do it here. Don't leave. Start it here.
Yeah, it's such a no-brainer idea that, like, every big tech company, maybe not even big tech company, medium-sized, even small tech companies, I mean, that, think about ways, smarter ways to keep the talent that you have. I mean, the talent competition is so fierce everywhere, even here in Chicago. I mean, we're seeing small startups already lose people who are going after spinning around their own ideas into making their own companies. It's such a no-brainer for Google.
Okay, so if you're Google and you've got this guy or this woman who you really want to hang on to, and you say, come up with an idea, and then you can come to San Francisco and be in our offices and work on your idea, create your idea, right?
Yeah.
You've taken that person out of your labor force. Right. I mean, aren't you losing them in a way?
Force. I mean, if think about Gmail and Google News, right? If these were products that were created by empowering their employees to think outside of their current job or structure, that's kind of what they want to do more of. And the thing is, it is, especially if you're a Google veteran, it's going to be easy to raise capital if you have an idea. So some of these people, if they have this idea, they're going to leave and do it anywhere. Right. So the idea is to get ahead of it and say, all right, if you have this entrepreneurial bug, which is what Google is created on, so why run away from it? Keep it, nurture it. Just do it here.
In some cases, you know, for Google, the next idea is more valuable than the current idea.
Right. So it's going to clearly work for both if it works, and I'm sure it will.
Not only do I think you'll see it work, I think, like Jim was saying, I think you're going to see this be a norm. I think you're going to see every company kind of set up these in-house incubators.
Hey, the cats with the cash were in town last week, right, for the venture show.
Yeah.
How did we do?
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, the Venture, Summit. Yeah, the Venture Summit, it was their second one. It was about a year and a half ago was the first one. And the Venture Summit is all about just getting coastal venture capitalists here in the Midwest and checking out some of the startups that are here in Chicago that they might not else have seen. I mean, Mark Tebbe, the chairman of Chicago Next, gave this really great anecdote kind of at the beginning of the summit about how years and years ago, Bill Gates would fly into Chicago, but the only way to get a meeting with him was during his layover from Miami to Seattle. He wouldn't actually like get out of the airport, and this was pre-9/11, so where you could go and actually meet him at the gate and talk to him and get meetings. And he kind of mentioned that Chicago wasn't necessarily a flyover city, but it was a fly-through city. Well, the Venture Summit's kind of an indication that Chicago's not a fly-through or a flyover city anymore. People are willing to come here, invest, and learn about the companies here in Chicago.
Yeah, and the reason why they're doing the Venture Summit is that last year, 18 of the top 20 venture firms that were spending in the Great Lake regions were all Great Lakes firms. And that's great, right? You want in-region firms investing in region startups, but you want to diversify that number a little bit. We need Boston venture capital firms investing in Chicago. We need Silicon Valley firms investing in Madison startups. That number needs to be more 10-10, and that's what the Venture Summit's about. Not trying to get deals today, but saying, hey, a lot of stuff going on. Make sure you have maybe an associate partner down here once a quarter.
That's Will Flanagan, the general manager of Chicago. And oh, Jim Dahlke in the studio as well. And people can find more at chicagoinno.streetwise.com. Or what's the best?
Chicagoinno.com.
Chicagoinno.com. All right, gentlemen, great to see you again.
Thanks
so
much.
We'll see you again real soon.
Thanks, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Radio. 12:36, you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we do not like to talk about killing radio stars, but maybe the podcast killed the radio star. Who knows? Do you have an idea for a podcast, or do you have a favorite podcast? What makes it stand out for you? Dan Franks is the co-founder of Podcast Movement 2016. It's a big show coming to Chicago in July, and he joins us on a phone line now. Dan, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, thanks for having me, Steve. I'm excited to be coming to Chicago and be talking to you now.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about the show, but you know, let's just start with this idea of podcasts, because you know, when young people, college students and things, talk to me about broadcasting or getting into the media in one way or another, hosting programs or things like that, you know, I say the good news is now is that really anyone can do it. You don't need to be hired by a radio station or TV station. Anyone can have a voice. The bad thing is that everyone can have a voice, and it's really difficult to get yourself heard and to build an audience, right? And it seems to me that nowhere is that truer than in podcasting. Anyone can have a podcast, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right, and that is, the like you said, the good thing and the bad thing is that anybody can do it. I think a lot of people, you mentioned the students and some of the folks coming up potentially looking at broadcasting or podcasting as a viable career, one of the biggest things that attracts them to podcasting really is that creative freedom to do whatever you want. But at the same time, the reason why some of those whatever you want aren't on the regular radio airwaves is because they're just really not that good
right.
of an idea, or you're just not cut out for it. So that filter and that weeding out process, it's a little more organic in podcasting. So it might just be a little longer for those people to figure out what they're doing. Isn't
but
right?
It seems to me, though, you can also have great content and be putting out a wonderful podcast all of the time, but not getting an audience. I mean, it's got to be hard to sort of be found and discovered and to grow that crowd.
It is, and it's getting harder and harder as we go, and as more people from terrestrial radio do either make that move or start simulcasting some of their things to podcasts. So, yeah, I mean, the sea is somewhat crowded, and it's getting more and more crowded, so that ability to break out and be seen is getting more and more difficult.
It's interesting, the coincidence of all of this. On Saturday night, I went to a venue. It's a music club called The Shed in Deerfield, and we're going to talk in the next segment about turning a bar into a music venue, so the coincidence there. But the other was, I was watching a buddy of mine who's recording. He's creating a new podcast, a video podcast called The Sesh, and it has to do with musicians. They're recording them now, and they want to launch them in August. What's your advice to someone like that to try to find an audience? What does he need to do?
Yeah, well, I mean, the biggest thing is to have, right now, since it's podcasting is pretty much an online medium, tap into wherever those people that potentially would be listening to your podcast, wherever they're hanging out. So, you know, whether it's online forums or whether it's Facebook groups, there's a lot of different places that people from various niches go and hang out. So really you need to know your audience. But yeah, getting started like he is, getting started, you're not going for this giant audience. That's one of the beauties of not being on radio, is it's not necessarily about just numbers and that's it. You can have a very small number, but because podcasting is active listening versus passive and people are making a choice to listen to whatever it is you're doing, you can have much smaller numbers but still have overall more active, more dedicated people listening and acting. So I think the first thing for anyone like that, they just need to know it's not all about the total numbers of downloads and total number of listeners, but it really is about how active your listeners are.
How do you turn that into cash?
Well, you know, there are people, and it's very few, that are making money just from your traditional CPM style selling ads on your podcast. But there's a lot of people, like it sounds like what your friend's doing, that maybe it's some kind of add-on to something else they're doing, and it's just an additional arm to it. So oftentimes people are using their podcast to promote, whether they're authors, to promote their books more, or TV people, whether to promote their movies or their television shows. So I think a lot of people see it not as something that by itself is a viable business, but an extension of something else they're doing.
Will a great podcast always be discovered? Or I talk to a lot of authors, and I like to ask them if there are great writers out there who, you know, if the system works, that they'll always be read, or if there are great writers out there of whom we will never hear or never read because they'll never find the right avenue. And I just wonder, are there great podcasts out there that no one will ever listen to?
Yeah, I mean, just like any other art, really. I mean, if you think about it, just like you mentioned with the authors, same way with musicians, some of the most famous musicians in the world, they cite their influences as people you've never heard of. And it's that same thing. You know, if you're really hardcore into listening to podcasts, then you personally might discover some of these some of these things under the rock, but in terms of those guys living and still doing their content and staying under a rock, sometimes it's hard. Not everything is discovered, and that's unfortunate, but as the listenership grows, I think that'll change. And for the most part, I think the cream rises to the top. We've seen lately a lot of independent podcasters get picked up by some of these so-called podcast networks. So there are people out there actively looking for some of this undiscovered talent, if you will.
Tell me about those podcasts. Tell me about those podcast networks. What are they like?
They're just kind of online central locations for different podcasts. So you have the Earwolf Network. That's one of the big ones based out of L.A. and New York, and they started out as a comedy podcast network. So if you're a fan of comedy podcasts, you know that if you see that little Earwolf tag, then you'll probably like whatever they're putting out. And then it's expanded into some of these ex-public radio people that have broken off and started their own podcast networks. Gimlet and Radiotopia are two of the big ones. Those both have either past or current tie-ins with some of the public radio spaces. And those are more of your highly produced content, things you might sound like what you would hear on public radio or This American Life, some of those. So they really are just kind of, central production houses almost that are putting out content that is similar. So if you like one, you might like the rest. And much like on a radio station, you might keep it tuned to that same radio station all day. You might just tune into all the podcasts from that same network.
And let them roll. We're talking to Dan Franks, the co-founder of Podcast Movement 2016. It's in Chicago in July, July 6th through the 8th. All right, tell me a little bit about Podcast Movement, Dan.
Yeah, it's a conference that myself, as a podcast enthusiast and also a hobbyist podcaster, we put together an event that I and my co-founders would want to go to. It's an event that if you're either a current podcaster or potentially looking to get into podcasting, you can go to, and there's 80 or 100 sessions for all different topics, whether it's you're looking to get better at technical side of podcasting or learn the creative side or just figure out if podcasting's for you at all. All different sessions, all different workshops. It's 2.5 days, over 100 speakers and panelists from across the industry. A lot of them are Chicago locals, but a lot of them are coming from around the world, and experts and celebrities and a little bit of everything will be there.
I see Kevin Smith's name on the list of speakers.
Yeah, Kevin Smith from Jay and Silent Bob, and a lot of people don't know him because they know him from the movie side of things, but he's a very popular podcaster and been doing it for a long, long time. So, yeah, he's one of our biggest names this year.
And so if people want to come, how do they find out more information?
They can just visit podcastmovement.com and check out our list of speakers and find out about the when, the where, the how, and the why, and everything else.
Is this the sort of thing where people are going to be, are podcasters coming here in hopes of being discovered?
Yeah, there will be some of that. There's basically all those networks I mentioned and three or four times that many, in addition to other networks, your public radios, your WBEZ, some of the public radios from New York or NPR, they'll all have people there. And they will be looking for talent. They will be having those discussions. It's a very interactive event. So, potentially people that are there kind of shopping their shows, if you want to say that.
Dan, you know what my favorite podcast is?
What's that?
It's Steve Bertrand on Books at WGMplus.com. I'm just saying.
Hey, definitely anything else we've mentioned today, that's the first one to subscribe to.
It's great to talk to you. Maybe we'll check in again when you're around in July, but I wish you success and welcome to Chicago.
Thank you for having me on, Steve.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Well, 51, you're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. As I said, it's sort of a odd coincidence, but we're talking podcasting earlier and now music venues today, and I happened to be at a place over the weekend, a relatively new music venue where they were recording a podcast. I don't know, Donnie Biggins, you're going to have podcasts coming out of the Tonic Room?
Only if they want to come in and do it, yes.
Welcome to The Business Lunch.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, Donnie is the new owner of a bar called The Tonic Room, which is a little north of Halsted and Fullerton, right?
Correct.
And you've been working there as a music buyer for a few years.
Yeah, I took over the music in July 2012.
And now you own the bar.
Correct, yes.
What were you thinking, Donnie?
I just needed it all.
You know, they say the first rule of sailing is never own your own boat. And now you've got your own boat.
It's a lease. I don't own the building. Oh,
okay.
So,
well, I want to talk to you about transforming it and holding on to what it is and yet making a transformation. But we're talking before, and I mentioned to you one of my favorite bars when I was much younger living in Chicago was the Everly Club on Halsted, just north of Fullerton. That used to be sort of my go-to place. And lo and behold, you're now the owner of that place.
That's right, yeah.
That's the Tonic Room.
That's Tonic Room.
All right, so I'd stopped in there a few years ago just to sort of relive old memories, and I didn't remember it was called the Tonic Room. It's kind of a dive bar, right?
Yeah, it is. It's going for the honky-tonk kind of vibe now. So.
And so how do you, and you want to bring in more music there, or what is it that's going to be different with you as an owner?
We're going to change our hours, so we'll be open during the day starting in May. And I'm looking to do more happy hour specials, and on Fridays doing something called the Nashville Happy Hour.
Yeah, I like
and
that.
That'll be like a honky-tonk themed day.
Which fits in a little bit with the blues, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's kind of blues alley there in a way.
Yeah, and you kind of have the feeling of Broadway in Nashville when you walk down Halsted, so that's how I kind of imagine that strip.
And maybe even outdoor concerts?
That's something that
we've got the mayor on the line. You want to ask the mayor?
Yeah, let's just give it an okay.
just say yes.
Yeah, I have an option for a patio, but it has to come with neighborhood approval.
Right, so. Which could be difficult in that neighborhood.
Sure.
Tell me then about this idea. So you've taken a bar, the Tonic Room, Everly mm-hmm. Club, and is known as sort of a dive sort of bar. You're now bringing the music in. There's been music there before, but I'm imagining you want to transform it, but you want to hold on to it too.
Sure.
So how do you do that?
Well, one of the things that I've concentrated on doing is creating it as a musician-friendly space. So a lot of people that work there are Chicago musicians. We offer musicians the best payout in the city for their concerts.
Right.
I don't take any as a promoter prior to being the owner, I wasn't taking a promoter profit from the musicians.
Okay.
So it's kind of turned into a place where people know that they can come in and pack a small room and walk out with good money.
So almost a little more inviting for musicians mm-hmm. in a way.
Yeah.
That's kind of funny to me because you're a promoter, right? You're placing people at the Beat Kitchen in all different parts around the city.
Correct, yeah.
And so you, as a promoter, rely on getting a cut for these places.
Yeah.
And yet at your own joint, you're not going to take a cut.
It was just kind of part of my business plan of being a musician and a promoter and understanding that struggle.
Right. So in a way, you're swimming against your own stream.
Sure. I'm not in it for the money at this point. But
well, you're a musician yourself, right?
Correct, yeah.
What's the name of your band? The Shams?
The Shams Band, yeah.
And you've got a gig coming up?
House of Blues, the downstairs room. We're doing like a beer event on Thursday.
Okay. Will the Shams ever play the Tonic Room?
Too much.
Yeah. Is that right?
Too often.
Are you ever gonna? So I'm interested in this idea of it becoming just a organic musician home. Like we have just people going up and playing right from time to time.
Yeah, and we have a Tuesday night hootenanny is what we call it, and it's a more of a stringed instrument themed night.
Nice.
Where artists are invited to come up and bring their own stringed instrument and participate. And we've been doing that for about a month.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
What's been your biggest surprise now as a guy who bought his own boat, bought the bar, leased the bar?
There's a lot to clean.
You didn't notice that before?
No, I was just kind of in and out a lot. So now I'm hanging out a lot and trying not to spend any money hiring anyone to do anything.
So you've got the dirt under your nails.
Yeah, I'm doing it all myself.
Are you enjoying it? I mean, is owning a bar sort of the dream for you? Is that why you're in it?
Yeah, it's always been a dream. I've just always wanted to be in control of a space that I'm managing people and overseeing kind of the talent that comes in and out of the doors.
All right, so you walk in, the bar opens, you walk in. Let's say the front door, you're probably going mm-hmm. in the back door, and you look up and you see your joint. What's the first thing you notice as the guy who owns it?
Elephants.
Elephants? What do you mean elephants?
I've my logo's been an elephant for a long time. I collect them, and now I'm bringing them into the room. So.
That's Donnie Biggins. He's the owner of the Tonic Room and sort of an organic music joint creeping up. I like that, you know, by Kingston Mines and and blues and all of that. And turns out it's in one of my favorite spots. Yeah. Who knew? Nice to talk to you. Wish you good luck.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.